Okay, so we're back for episode 121, or is it 120? 121, right?
21, yep.
121 of Powers and Principalities. Tonight we agreed to talk about Sweden, particularly Sweden and social engineering. Now, of course, we talk about social engineering in Sweden. We have to talk about, you know, sort of the Swedish socialism, they say, or the third way, the middle way, as they say. This kind of began way back. It was gradual, sort of a Fabian approach, you could say. The 1840s, it started began in Sweden when they, I guess, instituted compulsory education, public schools in Sweden. And this sort of imposition of the state into the private sphere, the family and localities. And it picked up throughout the 19th century, but really the 20th century is when it became sort of, I think, coalesced or formed into a succinct or clear idea of organizing society. They call it the Folkhemmet. The Folkhemmet. Now, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but basically translates into the people's home. It was a political concept that played an important role in the history of the Swedish Social Democratic Party and the welfare state. It sometimes refers to the long period between 1932 and 1976, when the Social Democrats were in power almost exclusively, I think for a few years. And the concept that's when the concept was put into practice in various stages. It also works as a sort of a name for the Swedish welfare state, the sometimes referred to as the Swedish middle way. Folkhemmet was viewed as a midway between capitalism and socialism. The base of the Folkhem vision is the entire society ought to be like a small family, a rather big small family, I guess you could say, several million members, where everybody contributes, but also where everybody looks out for one another. The Swedish Social Democrats' success in the post-war period is often explained by the fact that the party managed to motivate major social reforms with an idea of Folkhem and the national family's joint endeavor. The term is thought to have its roots in Rudolf Kaelin's vision of a corporatist-style society, based on a class collaboration in the national interest, largely based on Otto von Bismarck's juxtaposing of conservative stability and continuity to social reforms otherwise associated with socialist parties, such as universal health care and unemployment benefits. The Social Democratic leaders Ernst Wigforss and an avid Keynesian and Per Albin Hansen, a social corporatist, are considered the main architect of the Folkhemmet, with the inspiration from conservative Kaelin. It was later developed by Prime Minister Tage Erlander and Olaf Palme, until the Social Democratic Party lost power in 1976. Per Albin Hansen introduced the concept in 1928, saying that Sweden should become more of a good home, this being marked by equality and mutual understanding. Hansen advocated the traditional class society should then be replaced by the people's home. The concept came at a time when nationalization was being questioned and marked the party's abandonment of the notion of class struggle, a concept fundamental to the early social democratic movement. Instead, they adapted a planned economy that would be called function socialism, where businesses were controlled through regulation rather than government ownership. Of course, two towering figures in this Swedish social engineering were Gunnar Myrdal and Alvar Myrdal. During the 1930s, social engineering became an important part of the Folkhemmet. Alva and Gunnar Myrdal's 1934 book, Crisis in the Population Question, inspired a radical and progressive policy for how to deal with the declining population. A number of changes took place in the period, including expansion of the public sector, Wigforss's economic policies, Gustav Möller's reform of the pension system, and Gunnar Myrdal's housing policy. This was in the 1930s and 50s, old houses were said to be overcrowded, dwellings for the lower classes, and they were demolished, and they were moved from the countryside or the rural areas into the cities into modernized housing. I think in the 60s they had the Million Homes Project, which is a very ambitious project, which urbanized much of the, you know, of a rural, at the time, Swedish society was mostly rural, and that had a profound effect on Swedish culture. A lot of these buildings had this funkus architecture. Funkus, I guess it's functionalism. A lot of flat roofs, which I think is kind of ridiculous in a region like Sweden with all the snow, but showed this modernist, inhuman look to this housing. So this was sort of that push, and it was in the 1960s and 70s it really picked up, and it had a profound, like I said, it had a profound effect on Swedish society. For a while, you know, Sweden is the Nordic model, socialism, the West looked to, and to the extent that it did work, and we can get into some of the critiques and problems and sort of the hidden grammar behind this decades-long program. But it became more problematic because this, and we'll get into maybe this is why, is the program itself has some inherent internal contradictions. One thing, it penalizes large families. Of course, when you start to penalize larger families, people have less children and there's less of a tax base to support a growing welfare state. And Sweden ran into that problem in the 1980s, and there was some political upheaval, you know, pro-market reform, demand for lower taxes and these things in the 80s and 90s. And there was some reform, but particularly in the past 10 years, there's been, of course, been this immigration issue where, for some reason, people from the Middle East, North Africa, are being transported into Sweden. And I think almost a million have gone there now. It's had a profound impact on that country. It's led to increasing crime rates, rape, which was virtually unknown in Sweden, has skyrocketed. And I think most of the perpetrators are foreigners or newcomers, as they say. I read somewhere that now Sweden, 20% of the people in Sweden are now foreign-born. So this is a particular strain on the economy and the culture, because to the extent that the Folkhemmet worked, is this idea was a national family, 9 million Swedes. And if you start pouring in foreigners, they're not going to have the same loyalty or feeling or to the system, and you'll get corruption, and you'll get sort of the cynical exploitation of the system, and just simply collapse, not just because of demographics, also because of the culture of the immigrants. It isn't, they don't have the same sense of loyalty or, I guess, to the host culture as the natives do. So that's sort of a brief overlook on kind of what Sweden went through in the past, you know, I guess, a century. Sweden and social engineering, what do you have to say about it?
Well, it's a complete disaster, and a designed one, obviously. Sweden, you know, as all of the European countries, has been under attack. I mean, probably since before Emanuel Swedenborg, the Swedish Masonic mystic who brought a lot of what can be called New Age ideas into the Swedish culture and beyond New Age. I mean, he was almost like kind of like the Aleister Crowley of Sweden. And so that was, you know, a couple hundred years ago. And then since then, Sweden has, well, it's gradually been absorbed by the socialism. And that probably isn't the best word, but I would just say the EU philosophy. Sweden had, as you pointed out, was one of the very first kind of socialism experiments. And socialism, you know, like my opinion on socialism is that the economic theory is not as important as who is controlling the economy. And when the Swedes were in charge of their own economy, socialism wasn't looking too bad. They generated enough wealth. And they had a very small amounts of requirement for government largesse. I mean, the population were basically very productive, and there was, you know, a few unmarried mothers, and there were some old people without funds, and so socialism kind of worked, you know, and under that that criteria. But the EU, of course, swept Sweden up. And, you know, Tim, when you when you give up your control over borders and at the same time give up your control over money and credit creation, I mean, what can go wrong, you know? Well, everything. And everything did go wrong. And, you know, in Sweden, just to give you some statistics, sales of pepper spray in have gone up over 300% amidst concerns over the country's rape problem. After a string of sexual assault and rapes in the span of 5 nights, Swedish police in numerous cities advise women not to walk alone at night or go home early. Figures released last year found that 58% of convicted rapists and 85% of all convicted assault rapists in Sweden were born outside of Europe. Wow. In cases where the victim did not know the attacker, the proportion of foreign offenders was more than 80%, and nearly 40% of the convicted rapists are from the Middle East or from Africa. And these are areas which Sweden has accepted immigrants, typically under this asylum program, but this is basically all done through the EU. In other words, it's not like the Swedes took a vote and said, "Hey, what we need here in Sweden is more North Africans." A study by the Swedish newspaper, I won't even give it a shot, Aftonbladet, you know, found that 90% of gang rapists in the Scandinavian country in the last 6 years had a migrant background. Other figures show that migrants from Muslim-majority nations commit 84% of the very violent rapes in Sweden. 20% of people aged 16 or older stated they did not want to go out in evenings or were concerned about being assaulted or threatened. Among women, it's almost 30%. This is reported by Statistics Sweden. I mean, this is a country that didn't have any of these problems, and then these immigrants were brought in, and now you have this problem. And so, you know, I want to first of all say that I am not you know, accusing the people in the Middle East and in North Africa who've been brought there of sort of being inherently evil. This is would be if you think that, you're just missing the real point here. Most of these people are coming from war-torn areas or areas that have just been demolished, like Libya or Syria, right? This is where you're getting most of these guys. Now, think about what's happened in those nations over the last 15 years, right? It's just been a complete wipeout. Their culture has been shattered. So what I'm saying is these people have been deliberately psychologically engineered to hate Europeans because this is really who they most, you know, see as being responsible for the destruction of their country, or, you know, perhaps not the most, but certainly part of it. So they've been engineered basically, you know, by their circumstances, to just basically have the moral perspective, right, that this behavior is basically kind of a retaliation and gee, you know, it's I mean, again, I'm just guessing at this because I haven't really interviewed any of these people, but this is how I am framing it.
I suspect also as they come into the West or they access Western technology and exposed to Western media, they're get exposed to Western pornography, which portrays women as being willing,
Of course. Well, one of the most telling things was I'm not sure which country brought it out. It may have been Sweden, but it may have been some other country, but it showed like basically it was encouraging. It was physical cartoons of dark-skinned men having sex with blondes.
That was Germany, the public health department.
Okay, there
It
you go.
was
Right.
PSA advertisements with sort of graphic art with
Yeah. Right.
dark men, swarthy dark men on top of, white-skinned blonde women.
So I think that that's really is the culture that these guys are being subjected to. Because obviously, Sweden, with a declining population, we'll have to talk about this, the last thing in the world it would need would be to bring in individuals who don't, who can't produce any income for the government, right?
I mean, I imagine a high percentage of these immigrants are on welfare.
Well, try 100%. I mean, yes. They're not being brought in because yeah. of they have, you know, they're going to like replace engineering's, you know, aging Swedes. I mean, they don't, most of these people are from the poorest regions of third world countries that have been blown up, right? That have been blown up. I mean, think about Libya. Yeah. Think about Syria. Think about what it's like to have been in the last 10 years. So this is where they're coming from.
Yeah, you see these photographs of these women in these hijabs, like in some cold, you know, like Malmo or some Swedish town with the snow 3 feet up, three feet thick or high. And they're among these blondes. And it's like, okay, who thought this would be a good idea?
Well, I mean, the people who thought it was a good idea were the people who controlled the EU. Mm-hmm. Who basically, I mean... have as a goal of getting rid of European races and culture. And this is what they want to do.
Yeah,
this
couldn't have clear you plan, yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And so that's why when you say, well, what's going on in Sweden? You just have to look back to who's bringing out the EU. Look at the groups that are actually creating it. You know, go back back to the end of World War II and then look at the Bilderberg Group, the Club of Rome, the, you know, Lee Circle, you know, all of these groups are basically Masonic banking family. I mean, you look at the Rockefellers, the Ford Foundations, the Rothschild families, the Mellons, they're just everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, Donovan, the head of the OSS, was, he was working in 1950 with the Bilderberg Group on plans to create a European parliament, right? This is what becomes the EU. So basically the EU is set up as a slave camp, one where, you know, the final solution basically for the Europeans. And so this is part of how they're going to get rid of Europeans. They're going to basically, when they bring in this kind of a population, Muslims that have been with no education, who have the most primitive religious perspective, right, of that Islam has to offer, from countries that have been blown up by, basically, as they see it, by European foreign interests. Well, gee, they're not, what do you expect of these guys? You know, they're going to behave with hatred and with sexual violence whenever they can, quite often. Right. That just seems it's just automatic. And so what will happen is, of course, that the Swedes will leave. They'll try to find some other place to go. And that this will it's sort of like the
they move to Minnesota. Then they'll find out they're living next to people from Sudanese or something.
Yeah, this is the, right. It's
Somalians
like,
or something.
when you look at. How they got rid of the ethnic communities in Chicago and all these other areas.
It's very similar, yeah.
Yeah, it's just done on a national basis. So, yeah. It's deliberate. It's with the intent of genocide. They are maneuvering populations around to create the most destructive effect that they possibly can on both groups, right? Really, on both groups.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, they're not. The idea that they're going to, you know, give a workers' paradise to, the Muslims, you know, right. These guys are headed straight for the slave camps. But this is how they do it. You know, this is one of this plan where they give you the workers' paradise concept. So the EU, look, you know, we'll have one currency. You can travel anywhere in Europe you want. It's just going to be terrific. We're almost like there'll be more prosperity. This was what they were telling people. This is from, you know, the Bilderberg people and, you know, like the Club of Rome. And these guys are touting of how it's going to be. And then as soon as they get the power, as soon as they get rid of the national governments, the local governments, the ethnic governments, well, then here it comes. You know, here it comes. They're going to blow you up.
It's important. The comparison of what occurred in the United States in the middle of the 20th century. I think is important because what happened in the United States, you had former sharecroppers come to the Mississippi Delta being sent up into Chicago with really no accommodation, being dumped in the middle of established, you know, ethnic Polish and Irish neighborhoods, knowing that there'd be an issue. There were riots during World War II. This is done, you know, during the labor shortages of the Second World War. So these sharecroppers were shipped up. They were told they hire much higher paying jobs, better lifestyle. Same thing. Yeah, I think it was many of the blacks were shipped out of Georgia into Philadelphia to do the same thing with the Irish neighborhood, Irish and Italian neighborhoods in Philadelphia. You have a situation in the South. Of course, the South too was war torn and impoverished, and the economy had been smashed by the North. So you had a surplus population that you could exploit decades later for cheap labor, or some sort of demographic or political objective, which the empire had, during the Cold War in the 50s and 60s, to smash up the ethnic Catholic neighborhoods, to smash Catholic power. But you have a situation with the culture shock where you have people in the South who are living in rural areas. All of a sudden, they're sent into Philadelphia or Chicago, and they're living in these new, high-rise tenement house or high-rise apartment complexes. And, they come into the North where all of a sudden there's no more as many restrictions on just how they're living, and it's a recipe for disaster. You have a lot of single men showing up, and they're being put in these old, being utilized to just smash up these neighborhoods. When it was exposed during the church committee hearings, that the some of the Great Society programs, I think it was the Office of Economic Opportunity that was led by Sergeant Shriver, who they found out they'd given almost $1 million to the Blackstone Rangers, a gang, I think in Chicago, that was whose job was to chase out, I think, ethnic Poles. But the government's funding criminal activity, more or less, same thing where you have the war-torn Middle East now this population can be weaponized as proxies to achieve this demographic objective in Europe, It's an important comparison because it's just, like you said, it's an international example. It was applied domestically in the United States.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, so I was just going to contrast like the Swedish sort of situation. I thought we would compare it to another country that has somewhat different immigration and racial policies. Let's compare Sweden to Israel. Okay. How is the Muslim asylum immigration to Israel going, Tim? Can you give me a breakdown on that?
Well, from what I understand, they're constantly expanding with settlements, and they're, so there's not much migration into Israel of non-Jews or
right.
Muslims.
Now, see, in Sweden, these people are given full, voting rights and things like that. How is the Palestinian and the dark-skinned thing working in Israel? Is that working out the same there?
Yeah, it's a little different, I think. I don't think they've, they do have representation in the Knesset, but it's guaranteed a minority. So.
Right. So that's a great democratic process.
Yeah.
So my point is that if I was a Swede, I would just use Israel as a model. I mean, look, they seem to be doing pretty well. I don't think their asylum program is very active to the Muslim countries, and which is odd because they're right there. I mean, they could save on train fare and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They could just get a whole bunch of them. But no, they don't do that. And so this would be, I would say, look, the Jews in Israel are interested in having a Jewish state, right? That's how they express it. And it's not clear what that means, Tim, because, they don't have a constitution, never been ratified. So you don't really know if it's a religion or if it's a race. What the heck, right? Kind of they can be both things or neither. It's sort of like
whatever suits their purpose.
It's math sometimes and it's but you never know. It's a race, it's a religion. What in the heck is it? But it's both or neither or whatever they want it to be. Well, I think that's about the Swede. I would adopt the same thing. Swede is like it's a religion.
Yeah.
as well as an ethnicity. But whatever it is, it is something that we kind of, we sort of want to have a Swedish nation because, we've had one for a long time. And all of us, who are Swedes, we're product of this process. So we're just going to hold on to it. And we're just going to adopt basically a mirror of the Israeli process of like how they deal with nations, stuff like that. Now, the reason they cannot do this is because they really don't have sovereignty anymore. Do that?
No. Yeah.
EU has the sovereignty. The workers' paradise. Once again, right? It's going to be terrific. We're going to have one currency, so the trade between nations will be expedited. There'll be much more prosperity, and you can just travel anywhere you want, not have any of these irritating, you know, like waits at airports and things like that for immigration. So the EU, and we'll have less warfare. This was the other thing, less war. And so now, if you're a Swede, you're scratching your head going, what the heck happened? What happened? Well, you were sold a bill of goods. EU is a slave state. The whole purpose of it is to create centralized power so they can then destroy your ethnicity, wipe out your nation, and basically just replace it. I mean, really, it's, you know, I just think that the example of the attack on the ethnic communities in America in the 50s and early 60s, perfect parallel, perfect, structure for the Swedes to understand what's happening to them now. And with a little bit of luck, if enough Swedes can go, wait a second here, this is actually looking kind of deliberate, right? This is actually looking like this is being done. These aren't the problems of the growth of the brave new world, whatever we were promised about the EU. This is done to destroy us. Well, maybe we can like leave the EU. Maybe we could like say, you know something, like the Brits.
A Swexit?
Yeah, a Swexit. Let's have a Swexit and get the hell out of the slave camp before we get wiped out.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's interesting, we're talking about Swedish, where Sweden is today, and it's a product largely of social engineering and the Swedish socialist model. Of course, the two figures I mentioned were, you know, Gunnar and Alvar Myrdal. And their program, very ambitious, covered, a sweeping program covered family policy, marriage, lending practices, maternity relief, even housing. That there, because I think it was again their book about the crisis in the population question was in 1930s Sweden had a population decline, lowering birth rates. Some say because of the several decades of these policies that were penalizing larger extended families, and it slowly became much more burdensome to have a large family. Long come the Myrdals prescribing more socialism, because their idea was, well, since it's expensive to raise kids, let's have the state pick up the tab, make it easy for everybody. Of course, the long-term effect of this would have an atomizing effect in society, because it atomizes individual families, breaks up these extended families that Sweden kind of had. And so it actually had the opposite effect. Surprise, surprise, right? I mean, if you look at the Myrdals, of course, Gunnar Myrdals was the author of, or at least the official author of An American Dilemma, his book on American racial relations. Of course, he knew nothing about America. The book was written probably by a group of sociologists at the University of Chicago. He just put his name on it. But they were both, I think Gunnar was at University of Chicago, and I think the Alva, yeah, here it is. Yeah, they have a. The Swedish model itself wasn't the Swedish idea. It actually was an American idea. It was a part of it was an American experiment that was started by Alva Myrdal working for the Rockefellers. It was influenced by the Progressive Era, and she had been in the United States, and she had been funded, at least given a grant, by the Laura Spelman Rockefeller Foundation. Surprise, surprise. And so she fell under the influence of the Chicago School of Sociology. That's what sociology was kind of developed at the University of Chicago, under Rockefeller tutelage. But this was, sociology was designed as a way to sort of, I guess, impose cybernetics, manipulate and control society, and give create an academic discipline for this thing. But it's important that, again, that all her ideas came out regarding family and childhood came out of Columbia University. and all that is funded by Rockefeller grants. So this isn't just a Swedish thing. It basically came out of this, the progressive era and this the Rockefeller Foundation money. At the same time, of course, they had set up the University of Chicago. They're developing this idea of sociology. So it's it look once again, we see a Rockefeller experiment being hatched and being implemented. Yeah.
And the experiment's always the same one, is how many Europeans can we get rid of?
Yeah.
Now, it always ends up in the same thing. The Swedes in the 70s actually had a their population was growing at nearly 1% a year. And then as these as the Swedish socialism set in, this changed, and actually the net population started to drop steadily.
And this because in the 50s, there were 50s and early 60s, there was a traditionalist revival in Sweden.
Yeah, well, I mean that's exactly right, and there was prosperity, and you know, after World War II, the Swedes were benefiting from a developing European culture that they were part of, but the this changed this so they actually began in the they were one of the very first countries to go to a negative birth rate.
Well, feminism really took hold there.
And feminism took hold. They were very much attacked by the I don't actually have the names of the individuals. I meant to do some study, but I didn't get a chance to. But at the end of 1981, 96% of the Swedish citizen had been born in Sweden. But now this is just changing dramatically.
Yeah, 20%
so
now. 20%.
It's incredible.
So it's gone from 4% to 20. So it's a 500%. Yeah. Do my math. What's that? From 4% to 20%. That is a...
five times. 5% increase. And so you've really... You have basically the Swede as a an ethnicity on the chopping block.
By the 80s, the family had really melted away, and now you had a lot of older people living alone, single mothers by the 80s, over half the births. So this idea of national family, the socialism actually had an atomizing effect because it destroyed the traditions and the mediating institutions that were outside the state that held society together. This is what it does. It destroys this, ultimately demoralizes society. And feminism itself is very, because that destroyed the male, think about the authoritarian personality. It destroyed the male figure, of course. And now, to this day now, when Swedish women are being raped, the men have no agency, nor are they inclined even to speak up about it, because they've been so emasculated. But I think going into the 60s, it was in the 60s that they started this Million Homes program. They started this urbanization. And going into the 60s, I think the average Swedish housewife spent 14 hours in the home. And by 1975, that had been reduced to 4 hours in the home a day.
Yeah.
And this had a profound effect, a deplorable effect on family life in Sweden. And so going in the 80s, you had this, into the 70s, 80s, you had this increase in psychological disorders, depression. I think now 80% of all Swedish teenage girls have eating disorders.
Yeah, I mean, well, there it is. You know, we're a social animal. Our structure has been established for, a very long time, millions of years. And when you do atomize it, when you create the brave new world where the state is responsible for educating the children, basically all of the inhabitants of the brave new world are nuts, right? They're all nuts, because you can't be a really sane human being inside of the brave new world. You can't be a really functioning male if you've been brought up through by state education into a world where there's no chance where you can have any masculine authority and pride and self-respect. If you're just, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
The whole society has been basically made insane. And of course, when you look at the authoritarian personality and the scales of, ethnocentrism and authority, right? Authority in and of itself, is a bad thing. Well, basically, aren't all of these things basically attributes of insanity? I mean, to me, it's just as clear as a bell that when you look at, that's one of the, I think it's kind of interesting. When you look at like Emanuel Swedenborg, he's one of these mystics, you know, he brings mysticism into Sweden. Like Aleister Crowley or Rasputin or any of the Masonic, you know, kind of agents that are there swirling around, usually the royal families or, you know, and they're there just to promote mysticism because that's a step in the right direction as far as they're concerned in terms of how they're going to dissemble Christianity. You know, they just, I mean, that's why mysticism, like Helen Blavatsky, right? I mean, you look at like the stuff she's coming up with, it's just completely crackpot, but it has a purpose. When you're opened up to mysticism, particularly if you're taking drugs, then the ideas of the Brave New World make more sense. You know, let's get rid of the father. That's not a good idea. Let's have egalitarian concepts that are ruling the structure of education. Let's bring in other ethnicities because, you know, that's really going to help with education. We'll learn more about the human, right? So all of these, the structures that led to a sane functioning civilization are just being, the culture of critique is just wiping out one after another. And then when they, at the same time, they're centralizing political power, right? In these malevolent organizations. I mean, the basically, if you look at the people who are inside the Bilderberg or Lee Circle or any of the Club of Rome, I mean, these are the most malevolent humans ever produced on the planet. I mean, they are just, you get into their background, how murderous they are and how selfish and how, you know, basically intent on social destruction these people are. And the idea that they would set up your government and they would run your money, and then you're, you know, like surprised where Sweden is just absolutely going down the toilet right now. Well, of course it is. Of course it's just basically been set up to fail and to destroy. And like you touched on a really good point there. We say that, well, where are the males to protect the women? Well, the males have been, you know, not just emasculated, but they've been atomized. They don't even, they, you know, they don't look at themselves in a role of protection. They don't have any role, right? Other than perhaps, you know, with some kind of, you know, structured job or something they go to. But, you know, in Sweden, marriage is just about, it's lose, they were losing that marriage faster there than anyone else because they're just this advanced socialist experiment.
Yeah, with the state doing everything, what's the purpose of marriage?
There is none.
I mean, it's like, yeah.
You know, they have a million home project. They got rid of all of the countryside culture, right, to bring them into an area where they could have more centralized control.
It's
They back.
funny, they'd use urban renewal, some urban renewal as an excuse to smash up and destroy old neighborhoods. A similar excuse is being used in Sweden in the 60s and 70s, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I mean, it's with Sweden. You know, in the 30s, you had this population problem that was aggravated probably by the policies in the preceding decades. But the idea was to kind of double down. And of course, we hear similar prescriptions here in the United States for, you know, government providing daycare and these things, and. You know, government doing more, getting more involved in family life and these things. You know, bills have been proposed about making sure that every family has a, regardless of what's going on, has a social worker to make sure there's no violence at home and these things, and providing government provided daycare, and you know, not addressing, you know, the problem. This is obviously a crisis that's created by the necessity or the creation of the two income family and the fact that both parents are working, which is a recipe for disaster in any, you know, problem in any family life because your kids are being institutionalized. This is what the state does. This is what the state did in Sweden. And so again, it's just more of the same. More of the same, you know, without looking back and maybe questioning the policies. But again, this stuff is malevolent, so we can understand why there isn't any, say, reflection or introspection about the policymakers. It's always more government, more socialism, more social engineering, because the ultimate goal here again is depopulation and the destruction of, you know, of Europe. And so
Yeah,
they're not going to do that.
Someone speaks up against the rape situation coming from the immigrants. The solution is to give the person an education in racism.
Yeah, or if there were a group of men who decided to protect their community, and form a group or a posse or some sort of militia or a street, you know, sort of like a local militia to protect, to deal with street crime, the state police would come in and arrest them. You know,
of course, they would be the problem. They would be, of course, yeah, charged with neo-Nazism.
Yes.
It's like,
in the, you read the reports about what's going on in Swedish domestic politics, these right-wing groups, and you always see articles like with links to neo-Nazism. You always see that in the article. And then the article doesn't explain the links. Like, what are you talking about?
I mean, exactly. I mean, you know.
But another important thing also went on in Sweden, too, is this one thing was there was a guy is in Sweden in the 60s, 50s and 60s, Ingmar Bergman was worked with this guy named Schein, who's I guess he was a German Jew who emigrated to Sweden during the Second World War. But they were a big part in destroying the production code in Sweden, using Bergman's artistic films to break the production code. And again, he was a part of the Ministry of Culture working with Olaf Palme to destroy the production code and introduce open pornography in Sweden in the 60s to corrupt the sexual morality of the Swedes. This also coincides with the decline of Lutheranism in Sweden. Michael Jones writes about this, how the decline of Lutheranism has left a void in Sweden. And at the same time, with the influx of immigrants into the country, the Lutheran Church doesn't do anything to defend Swedes. And so the decline of religion has created a vacuum, and on comes sort of this neo-paganism or ethnic white identity movement has been increasing in Sweden as a reaction to this, of what's going on. Because then there's some agency to defend Sweden, whereas the traditional institution like the Lutheran Church, which is the state church, isn't doing anything. So you sort of had this this effect in Sweden the past couple, you know, 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and then, of course, Ingmar Bergman, I mean, he's the most Masonic cesspool character imaginable. You know, his, like, magic flute thing, you know, his film is just, you know, it's just like an homage to the all-seeing eye, Horus, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. It's just, so, you know, you have the same problems there in a microcosm that we do on a larger scale here in, you know, in the United States. You've got people really suspicious in my mind, you know, as to what their real background is. I'd love to get a DNA test on Ingmar Bergman. And you know, but they're definitely Masons. And so they, you know, you end up with like the production code. I mean, Sweden was really a, you know, it was like a well-oiled machine culturally, mm-hmm. 50s. Really good population. It was slightly growing, but not too much. Great economy. Very good culture. There were, like, you look at the negative statistics, there aren't any. There's just no rapes. There's, you know, well, how are you going to break that up? And who would want to do that, right?
That seems so boring, Joe.
Yeah, gee.
Like,
yeah.
It's like you're talking, it's like living in Maine or Vermont.
Yeah, that's right. Like some place where you'd want to move to.
You got to spice these things up a little bit.
Yeah, we know. We need pornography to spice up our culture. But so there it is. You know, you look at, like, I mean, I won't go into it, but you look at Bergman's films. I mean, they're just horrendous Masonic. I mean, how, like, why would this guy even be permitted to, like, you know, do this? I've always protected. They're already in there to some extent. They're promoting people like this. And they're promoting, you know, step by step, like, they're moving toward degeneracy. It all moves in the same direction. You know, it's this avant-garde concept. What they're doing is they're moving away from a Christian culture that works, right, and mm-hmm. preserves ethnicity, and, of course, is potentially threatening to our oligarch friends, right? And they just move slowly and steadily to destroy it. And, you know, this kind of stuff now where they're bringing in the asylum seekers, right? I mean, it's just the last phase of it. They're going, you know, 50 years from now, they will have completely succeeded, and there really won't be anyone who is relating to themselves as a Swede except for the Ayman or the, you know, like, whoever's in charge of the religion of Islamic Sweden in 2090, because it really won't be anyone with traditions that are related to the people who are living in Sweden in 1950 and 60.
Yeah, this is the article that Emiko Jones wrote. I think it's in the September issue of Culture Wars. I guess the issue was dedicated to the rise of paganism in Europe, neo-paganism. He wrote in 1955, a journalist by the name of Joe David Brown wrote an article for Time magazine, which was then the information ministry for the CIA, explaining that in modern Sweden, sociology has become a religion in itself, and birth control, abortion, and promiscuity, especially among the young, are recognized as inalienable rights. Brown's article was part of a multinational conspiracy to strike down obscenity laws in which figures in the United States and Sweden played key roles. In the late 1930s, roughly a decade before it was taken over by Alger Hiss, the notorious Soviet spy, the Carnegie Foundation brought the Swedish socialist Gunnar Myrdal to the United States to write a book on racism. In 1942, Myrdal's book, An American Dilemma, rolled off the presses in the United States to universal acclaim, which is unsurprising considering its source in America's psychological warfare establishment. Myrdal's book purported to be about America's racial problem, about which he knew nothing when he was recruited to write the book. But in reality, An American Dilemma was about the advent of social engineering in America as part of a collaboration between the elites of Sweden and the United States, which targeted populations of both countries. The decay of Protestantism led to so this is later on, I'm skipping, but this is his summation of the situation that's going on in Sweden. The decay of the decay of Protestantism led to socialism. If Protestantism was Christianity without the church, socialism was Christianity without Christ. Socialism led to social engineering, which led to the collapse of sexual morality. And the collapse of sexual morality led to white nationalism, when the next generation realized their culture was defenseless against foreign invasion. So I thought that was a good sort of breakdown of what's occurring now in Sweden. I think we
Yeah, well, let me ask you, what do you think would be an effective sort of political response in Sweden? I mean, by people who are kind of aware of this, what would work? What do you think? How should they try to organize themselves?
Well, I mean, like I said, I quite frankly, I don't know enough about the political situation in Sweden, but I know they've been softened up for several, for decades, with sort of with social engineering, socialism, the decline of the family. So all the agency that a society needs to defend itself have been withered away, and so they've relied on the state, and the state's totally taken over by foreign agents or these collaborators.
Yeah, I don't see any way that they can move forward without an information revolution. Because, and that's why, hey, I know it's pretty,
Maybe it takes a few rapes, unfortunately. Right? I mean,
Well, the problem is that the rapes just always elicit the response the oligarchs want, which is race warfare, which they can then, use to tighten down the screws and put in that we need is more socialism, more multiculturalism. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
They
exactly. So we need
they'll
we need
this is
dialogue or something.
yeah, exactly. You know, and so
you go after the immediate enemy as opposed to the, at the meta level, the oligarchs that are doing
Well,
it.
you don't look at the strings, you just attack the puppet. And so the thing is,
Well, what
without
organization are bringing these people in? That would be my first question.
exactly. Who is, I mean, remember
They're not walking to Sweden.
the Swedes, they didn't. I mean, when you look at like the EU administrators in Brussels and the people who come up with all these immigration schemes, I mean, that they're not even elected. These are appointed people, you know. I don't know if you caught it, but I was kind of amazed at Ergo, what is how do you pronounce the name? Ergoman, the Turkish Prime Minister.
Erdogan, I think it says.
Erdogan, sorry, I gee,
It's
I
like Erdogan, but they want Erdogan, I think they
Well,
pronounce it.
anyway, so he has attacked Syria, right, last week, right? Just oddly enough, he attacked. And so he was criticized, and his response just, I thought, was really something that should really be brought to the public. I mean, his so what he said was, he says, look, he says, I don't want any guff from Europe. He said, I'm really sick of being, talked about in a negative way. And he said, if you don't stop this, I'm going to release the 3 million Syrian refugees that are inside Turkey into Europe. So what he this is what he actually
By the way, Turkey's a member of NATO.
I know. Well, there you go. Right. And so remember, there's no border. So he said, so President Erdogan wants Europe to understand that if it pursues sanctions or any punitive measures against Turkey because they're blowing up Syria now, or even if the European leaders complain too loudly, he won't hesitate to release the millions of Syrian refugees and allow them to start making their way into Central Europe.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, he's going after the Kurds in Syria, right?
Yeah,
Because
correct.
all that area, the Kurds are a stateless people, and they're kind of a problem for all the surrounding states. And the Kurds want their own little independent land. And of course, the Kurds, I think, have been working with the Israelis, but getting them oil or gas or something. And so this is why everyone in D.C. is upset with Trump for more or less giving Turkey the go ahead, the green light to do this
It's funny, we
right now.
always are able to supply the munitions that people need to blow one another up.
Yes.
We're always there on both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
But Erdogan said that he would open the doors for 3.6 million refugees should his country face criticism. And he said that, he says, look, he said that any kind. So what's happening is he's creating basically mentally ill immigrants, right? Who will be violent rapists,
Yeah.
can't function. I mean, just think of what they're coming out of. They are in refugee camps held in Turkey. Well, I mean, obviously they're not getting any kind of education. They're just, basically being fed and stockpiled. Now, that population, 3.6 million of them, what do you think, what would they be capable of if Erdogan then takes these shell shock illiterates and shoves them into Europe? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, just to stir up almost a civil war in many of these
Of
places,
course.
or call it an invasion, I guess. But this is why countries like Hungary have finally said no more.
Yeah.
And even Italy, I think Italy had a recent political crisis because of this. Salvini
What
was.
they do is that they, you see this over and again, the population revolts, the politicians say, or they elect someone who says, oh, you're right, I'm going to stop this. And then as soon as it dies down, the immigrants return. They start moving them back in again.
Yeah.
The people are just, the politicians are just basically being controlled. They say what the people want in order just to get the population pacified. And then the political correctness, the anti-racism brigades and the feminists and all the people that they've organized with the different titles keep browbeating, and then here come the immigrants, another wave.
Yeah,
We'll
the difference is those countries that still have strong ethno-religious identity are providing the most resistance. That's Poland and Hungary.
Yeah, and but anyway, so Sweden, I just wonder to what extent the idea that the EU is organized to bring about its extinction. I'm wondering, has that thought become popular? I mean, if it was, I'm not sure that we would know about it. They try to keep it from the general media. But I'm just thinking there has to be some people in Sweden that are wondering if this isn't all just an organized way to get rid of.
Well, it's interesting because Erdogan issues that threat, right? I'll release these immigrants into Europe if there's any sanctions or any response to my operations against the Turks, Kurds inside Syria. I remember Gaddafi made a similar threat. If I fall, there'll be a mass migration across the Mediterranean into Europe. It turns out that's what NATO wanted.
That's right. Exactly. See, this is the thing.
So be careful, because what happened is Italy fall. I mean, sorry, Libya. Gaddafi's murdered, and the government collapses, of course, and Libya descends into civil war. And then all those arms, I think Gaddafi's arms were then smuggled into Syria to stoke that civil war. Which
Yeah.
this is that whole thing, with Hillary Clinton and. What was it, Christopher Rosenbesser? I forget the guy who died.
Yeah, and that's right. That crazy thing. And then
Yeah.
when they finally killed Gaddafi, Hillary's famous, we came, what was it? We came, we when we killed him,
we came,
it's
we
like,
saw he died or something.
We saw, we killed him, but she's bloodthirsty maniac. So, but the thing is that, look, this is all this broad scale chessboard Europe kind of thing that's been going on for well over 100 years.
Yeah.
And what you're having, what they're doing is they're creating Eretz Israel, which means they got to depopulate from the Nile all the way to the Euphrates and then even beyond. Who knows how far the outer borders of that one is. So all the Muslims have to go. And they also want to get rid of, Europe ethnicities. So you have the Kalargi plan basically on a mass scale. I mean, where they're just, they're going to shove all these immigrants in there.
I think the Irish prime minister is a gay Indian or half Indian or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. So I was talking to this an Irish woman when I was in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago. And she said that she was like describing an Ireland that was like worse than Sweden. She just says there's immigrants everywhere. People are afraid. The media won't report any of this stuff because they're afraid of racism, and she was saying the same kind of thing. So, this stuff is everywhere. And
I mean, in the United States, where states like Minnesota, we've about the Somalis moving into Minnesota and causing, ironically, to a lot of people with Swedish and Norwegian backgrounds, came here in the 1880s, 1890s, and developed that area. And that area has been targeted with tens of thousands, perhaps as many as 100,000 Somalians, who just flown in. And same thing, Maine. Maine is a recipient of people from Africa for some reason. And Maine was recently criticized by the Washington Post as being too white. And I was like, my response was, they also complained because the crime rate was too low.
It's like, will these same people make the complaint that Israel is too Jewish?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's too Jewish, Tim. It's wrong. You see, if it's like, if Maine is too white and Minnesota is too white, then where are the complaints? I mean, we could easily just take the planes. It's closer, right? Mm-hmm. We can land in Tel Aviv and let these guys out. And then, why not? Why is there such a double standard of addressing, the plight of immigrants and asylum seekers?
Asylum is another where there's technical limits on immigration. If you can claim asylum, there's no limit, no limit on that. So everyone claims asylum, of course.
Yeah, of course. So these are, it's the EU. It's how they just conduct these mind control operations, which are really pretty weak if you look at them. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just amazing that the population accepts them to any extent whatsoever, but it's sort of like, the population doesn't think very well, so they'll believe whatever we tell them. These are asylums. We're not racist, so we're going to take them into our country. Right. And then how is it all going to work out? Well, it doesn't matter. It's a brave new world.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in the meantime, the Democrats get swollen welfare rolls. The Republicans get cheap labor. The corporations get cheap labor to work in their chicken farms or factories, whatever factories remain. And, the well-to-do, they don't want, I guess they feel better having brown people do the landscaping, mow their lawns for them and paying less for that. So everyone wants cheap labor and everyone's celebrating diversity, but there's no consideration for the effect on the host culture or appreciation that to what extent life is good in America. It's a product of the culture. So if you experiment with the culture, don't expect it, the quality of life to stay the same.
The thing that if you look at like the authoritarian personality and all of the, kind of the culture of critique that dominates America and Europe, it's interesting that the public never demands an attempt to analyze the beneficial effects of ethnicity. I never see this.
Well, it's been completely pathologized.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ethnic identity, meaning that you'd have a group that would, maintain itself.
Is this happening in Israel? Do they have the same problem? Do they have the authoritarian personality there, like with getting rid of the ethnocentric people?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious. I mean, are you aware of any programs?
No, I'm not. Not aware of
I wonder why not. I mean, it's shocking because they're working so well here. So the thing is, I would hope that the Swedes have an information revolution, and part of it is that they start to realize that that government and the anthropology sciences, that these all can be weaponized, and then you have the fake identity, the lifetime actors, the people are saying that, it's all for the better, we're going to have a brave new world. Look, we've had so much experience now, hundreds of years of this nonsense. It never is the brave new world. It always just ratchets further and further into the slave state. We really need an information revolution where, countries like Sweden can honestly discuss, the beneficial aspects of ethnicity.
Well, this phenomenon is occurring in virtually every Western country. It's whether it's Sweden, Germany, France, Italy, Ireland, the United States. And the takeaway here is that, yes, Sweden is more noticeable because it's a smaller country, 9, 10 million Swedes. So the effects are more immediate, but the same policies are being carried out in the United States. And just the United States is it's a different issue because the United States, we're a proposition nation. There's no one ethnicity. Where, when you talk about European states, come on, it's obvious. I mean, you're Swedish. You can't move there from Morocco or from Sudan or and say, look, I'm a Swede now. It's just not the way it works.
Yeah, so I mean, the question is like, what can really be done? What sort of information can be exchanged, and that can help Sweden sort of move to start asking the big questions and the real questions and having real discussion. I'm just wondering, what could be done?
Yeah, well, I guess there's been an increase in right-wing parties, and to the extent that the political process can respond to it, of course, they'll immediately be being called Nazis, and that's the old game there. But
The problem I have with that is that I see that neo-Nazis pop up, and a lot of times you go, well, gee, I kind of understand how they feel, but you never see these groups bring the big questions, the real questions, into the media. That's the thing that's why I think that, even when they come forward, like motorcycle gangs or, they've got tattoos, and you go, well, these are not really very sophisticated people. They don't really have much chance of like developing much of a following with middle class Swedes, But what group could come forward? What would be the appearance? What would be the information they would try to, move around and stand next to? Because I think that most of like the neo-Nazi stuff is actually, I think it's just controlled opposition. It's just a way to shut off any legitimate organization because they're being tarred with association with groups like that. I wonder what kind of a group could come forward. It'd have to be, I mean, all of the symbols of clothing and, and culture and education would be really important to like have worked out in advance. It'd have to be, basically good-hearted, clear-minded Swedes who saying, look, there's a lot of value to our ethnicity, and it is being destroyed either, accidentally or otherwise. Let's analyze it. Let's look at, what is happening to us and why. Let's start looking at family again. Why did family get, are we really better off without family? I don't think so. So this would be so that would be the thing, clean cut Swedes. Maybe ABBA could like start the rebellion and just ask the real questions, what are the advantages of family and ethnicity, and why are we giving these things up? Who is benefiting from our losing our ethnicity and losing our family structure? So there
Yeah,
it
you have to repeal the 20th century to deal with that
Yeah,
stuff. So,
deal it.
okay, Joe.
Talk to you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.